This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. We've got Carabao Cup action to talk about, United getting humiliated by their rivals and an underperforming manager in Spain. To do all of that, it's Jack Reeve alongside the star of the show, Mr. Mark Langdon. Mark, how are you?
It's good to be opposite you, Jack, for the first time in a while, back in the studio.
I know, well, obviously the
rare
listeners...
Rare to get you in London these days.
I'm trying to escape the negativity of Norwich in general. The football has kind of seeped into to society in general in the fine city. So, great to be back, and thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in once more. Let's start with Carabao Cup action, Mark. It was, of course, that we had in the week. And the big headline, Manchester City out. They've lost their first Carabao Cup game in 21 ties. West Ham, the victors.
Surprised to see that, because West Ham didn't play a full-strength team, nor did City. But it was certainly strong enough, you felt, on paper to get the job done. Pep also brought on some of these sort of, you know, big hitters as well. I mean, I, like many people, had sort of City down as, you know, really strong favourites to win this competition, because they usually do. And so, it's a good place to start when you're looking for a winner. You just go to Manchester City. It probably goes to show just what a good job David Moyes is doing, though. You know, we always focus on the bigger team, if you like, when they go out of a competition or lose a Premier League game. But it wasn't that long ago. The West Ham fans didn't want David Moyes back. And I could understand why they didn't want him back as well. But he has sort of built this sort of spirit within the team that means it doesn't overly matter now who's in and who's out on the side. I think that they're playing better than they were last year as well, when they, of course, you know, secured Europa League football. They've beaten Manchester United. They've beaten Man City. He will kind of feel like they've done a lot of the hard work now. And, outside of the obvious contenders, and Chelsea are favourites, they'll probably feel like if their name's not on the trophy, then they've certainly got a decent chance.
Well, you talk there about the spirit amongst the team, but it was almost a bigger battle winning fans back up, wasn't it? I mean, the past 5 years, decade of a West Ham fan, there's been Championship football in there, the move of the stadium. You don't have to look too far back, and it was getting quite nasty there.
The Olympic Stadium, or London Stadium, Stratford, whatever you call it, was, you know, this eyesore, really, and the fans were hating every minute of being there. No atmosphere, train, although they've got a train station there, the train's actually really, you know, the train company are not that great at putting on trains when there are matches, and, you know, they're having to walk around the shopping centre at times and weren't allowed in. And, you know, it takes a long while to get away from there. But you don't hear people moaning about that anymore. It's
doesn't
funny,
matter when
it?
You're winning, does it?
It doesn't. And it is interesting, because I still don't think the football is like this amazing, pretty stuff, and, you know, the West Ham way that was sort of being thrown at them when they weren't winning games. And it doesn't take much for those 1-0s to just flip the other side, and then all of a sudden, you know, people going, oh, this is boring football. But, I mean, I saw a team on Sunday, even more so than against City, against Spurs, that everyone knew their jobs. You could tell that everyone knew their jobs. They were protecting the goal. They were a threat at set pieces. They were a well-coached team. And, you know, I'm quite pleased for David Moyes, because he got that the dream job, really, at Manchester United that turned into a poison chalice. And he's had to work really hard to sort of get back to that kind of Everton level that he had. And I suppose what you could say, that this West Ham team is like that Everton team that he had, that wasn't able to win a trophy, but was always sort of knocking around, or more often than not, knocking around top six. So, well done to him, because he's not spent a fortune, and, you know, all the signings are working out as well. So they fully deserve a spot in the last eight. If you take City to pens, you'd be absolutely gutted if you don't beat them, because you really give yourself a good chance, and fair play to them.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be his 1,000th game in charge as a manager next week as well. So top work from David Moyes. Mark, we had a question from Alistair Kirby relating to the Carabao Cup. He asks, now City are out of the Carabao, who do you fancy? Now, the latest betting for this, Chelsea the favourites, as we mentioned, 11-4, Liverpool 16-5. Arsenal 5-1. I think you mentioned them very early on.
At the start, yeah. We tipped Arsenal at the start.
Leicester 13-2. West Ham in there. Spurs, Brentford, and Sunderland out at 66-1. Out of that list, Mark, Who are you heading towards?
Yeah, so the draw is on Saturday on Soccer AM. Not quite sure why. Yeah, I'm not quite sure why they didn't just do it last night. Yeah. It would have made picking a winner a little bit easier. What I am surprised about, I think Liverpool are probably too short. Jurgen Klopp, I don't expect him to suddenly start playing the big guns. You know, even if they got to a final, I think he'd be quite respectful of the players that got them there. So I would, if not rule them out, sort of at least put a cross next to their name, if not through it. I think I don't understand why Arsenal are any shorter, really, than, say, Leicester and Tottenham and West Ham. I don't think they've really done enough to justify that. So it would probably be around about that Leicester, West Ham, Tottenham mark that you'd be sort of looking at. I mean, why not West Ham now, I suppose? You know, you'd want to avoid Chelsea in the quarterfinals, but they look like outside of the obvious ones, they look as good as anything. I know my colleague Aaron Ashley in the Racing Post tipped up Brentford at the start. You know, can they concentrate on that cup yet? I'm not sure. It only takes a couple of bad results in the Premier League and you start getting a bit nervous, don't you? So I'd probably go for, you know, maybe a West Ham or even Tottenham, because they're 13-2 and 8-1, and I'm not sure they should be that much bigger than Liverpool and Arsenal at that stage.
There we go. There's your answer, Alistair. Let's head over to Spain very briefly, Mark, and talk about Ronald Koeman, who no longer has a job at Barcelona. What's gone wrong there?
I don't think he was ever the right person for the job in the first place. You know, a bit like somebody we'll probably speak about in a minute, you know, one of the reasons he got the job is because he scored an important goal in a European Cup final for Barcelona. I don't think
get the digs in early.
Yeah, I don't think his CV was worthy of the Barcelona job. His football certainly isn't worthy of managing Barcelona. Messi leaving is obviously one of the areas where it went wrong. But I still think there's enough good players at Barcelona. If you just go through that list, Ter Stegen in goal, you know, one of the world's best. Pique past his best, but still, I think a centre back that you would be happy enough. Lenglet sort of, you know, in and around the French squad. Jordi Alba was playing at the Euros not that long ago for Spain, did well. You got Frenkie de Jong, Busquets, Pedri in midfield. And then up front, you know, you could have something like Ansu Fati, Memphis Depay and Philippe Coutinho. It's not the Barcelona that we sort of most people come to love under Pep Guardiola, but it's certainly not a team that should be losing as many games as they are domestically and in Europe and in the style and manner that's happening. So I think the blame lies almost squarely at Koeman's feet. I think it's a good job to have. People think it's not. I disagree. I'm not sure how much lower Barca can sink. Okay. So I think you go in there,
expectations are so low.
They are. They are.
And anything is better than that.
Yeah. And now we, you know, people are not expecting them to win Champions Leagues or even La Liga now. It's about finishing in the top four in Spain and sort of, you know, maybe qualifying for the last 16 of the Champions League. Sounds like Xavi is going to get the job at some stage, whether there's like an interim boss in the meantime. I mean, that one, you are just throwing it up in the air and hoping it lands.
I mean, we're talking about CVs not necessarily suiting a role. I mean, surely Xavi is in a similar kind
of case,
isn't
it? I mean, obviously he's been managing in the Middle East, but yeah. I think you can take a chance on somebody that you don't know if they're good enough. Whereas I knew that Ronald Koeman, that Ronald Koeman wasn't good enough.
But it's still a risk.
Know. It is a risk. I mean, they will look at it and think that, you know, Pep Guardiola was a risk and that turned out all right for them. And they've been sort of looking for that Guardiola effect ever since he departed. I think that Xavi will try to bring back that Barcelona way and philosophy. And it's very important to them as a club that they play in that manner. I think some of the younger players, you're thinking, I mean, Gavi managed by Xavi, that'll be quite. But if you think that Gavi and Pedri, you know, these are two players, and Ansu Fati, that probably, as they were coming through, you know, in terms of their career, would have looked up to Xavi as like an absolute icon. So, you know, they probably, unless they've sort of been watching the clips back on YouTube, they probably didn't know who Ronald Koeman was, right, outside of the fact that, you know, he's an established name. So Xavi's got that working for him. I don't know, and it is a punt. I mean, if you were going for anyone, I would go for Erik ten Hag at Ajax, but I'm not even sure you could get him sort of mid-season and whether he even fancies it. But I'd rather go for the gamble than somebody that you don't know about. I remember saying this about Unai Emery when he was manager of Arsenal. I was, as a Spurs fan, I was happy that Emery was in charge because I knew he wasn't going to be good enough. When Arteta came in, you just didn't know. And I'm not even sure we still do now. That's another subject. But, so I can understand sort of the sort of willingness to take a punt on somebody, yeah, at this stage.
Let's get on to our match of the day for this week. So much to talk about with this game. It's Spurs against Manchester United. 19-10 Spurs, 11-8 Manchester United, 13-5 the draw. Mark, we have to start with last weekend's game, and it was a Super Sunday. Liverpool humiliating Manchester United. And the 5-0 scoreline aside, it was a truly horrendous performance. For me, the word that comes out, I'm looking at that and going, confusion. I don't know what they want to be. I don't think Ollie knows what he wants them to be. And we discussed it last week, didn't we, Manchester United? Which way do you play this game? And you were kind of expecting goals. United didn't even really look like scoring.
No, I think that comes down to the fact that when you're dysfunctional and the team doesn't work, like it just becomes really difficult. And if you go back to Ronaldo could have been sent off.
Should have been sent off.
I think kicking the ball is not an excuse in that situation. He clearly knew what he was doing.
That's a red for me.
Bruno Fernandes went in really high not long before Paul Pogba did. And I know the game was almost up at that stage, but that was just a team lacking, that had completely lost their head. Mm. And you don't often see that with a team that's sort of well-coached. Because
is there a return from that?
The fact that the manager's still there, I would say yes, because while you're still there and you've got the sort of the chance to change it, then there is, because they've got good players and they will still win matches with those players, like Ronaldo, Bruno Fernandes and whoever else. So I think there is. If they would have wanted to have, it was the perfect reason to get rid of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer if they wanted to. Obviously, if they keep losing, then eventually they will. But no, I think that there is a comeback for him because he's still in the job. But there are so many issues with that. And, it's a bit like anything, really. When you're struggling to cope in it, and you kind of fall back on what you know, and you've got that sort of body of work behind you. Even if it's like driving a car, if you know how to drive a car, if you have a near miss or something, you can sort of still fall back into with a crash, and you can still fall back in the now I've got to do this, and they haven't got that. They haven't got that body of work within their sort of hasn't been done in pre-season. It probably hasn't been done for 2 years. They literally look like they don't know what that song, You Don't Know What You're Doing, they literally look like that they actually don't know what they're doing.
The argument I couldn't understand watching the kind of aftermath,
it was amazing TV.
It was brilliant, but Gary Neville kept reverting to the point where we shouldn't take a chance on Antonio Conte because it hasn't worked for Van Gaal. That's nonsensical, isn't it? You can't not try to do something different because something didn't work 5 years ago.
No, I mean, you don't say, well, we've tried the best goalkeeper in the world, so we're not going to buy the new best goalkeeper in the world. I suppose what he's saying is that he probably feels like they don't want that chaos. Mourinho brings chaos with him, he'll...
But that performance was chaos,
it was,
wasn't it?
Chaos in a different way, but, Mourinho... could you imagine Mourinho's interview after that game? Well, he gave a similar one when Roma got beat 6.
It's exactly what I want.
But I don't think it's necessarily what Manchester United want. I thought Paul Heywood, Sting journalist, tweeted the other day that the reason they'll keep Ollie in charge is because they can control him. And I think that that's an interesting point.
Deflects attention away from the ownership almost.
It does. And, they can almost do what they want. Where, Ollie at this stage is not going to go out and start calling the Glazers out. Now, I think he's been backed. You can argue about sort of, how much they actually take out of the club on a sort of yearly basis. But, he's not going to have a pop at them. And so he becomes that shield, I suppose, a bit like Steve Bruce was for Mike Ashley for so long. But ultimately, I think Jamie Carragher said it best when he's like, Gary Neville has said, we need best in class. And then you're looking at in the dugout and going,
that was a stinging comment. That
it was,
wasn't it?
But I totally understand why you would not call for your friend, former teammate, to be sacked. I mean, I think that's just being a human being, really. But It's pretty obvious that if Manchester United have any ambition to really sort of challenge for the big titles, then they will have to make a change sooner rather than later. The organisation of the team has completely gone. Last year, at least you knew what they were trying to do because they sit in those big games. They used to sit back and hit on the counter attack. They can't really do that anymore, or don't want to do that. And the first goal where Greenwood went chasing on his own, and then Wan-Bissaka went on his own, and all of a sudden there's a massive hole.
You screenshot that defensive, and you're like, "Is this the 90th minute?" If you took it in isolation, it was.
I mean, and they were following the ball, and it was like watching sort of kids in a playground at times. And this is one of the biggest wage bills in world football. It was a total humiliation for United, and not just because it was Liverpool. You know, the performance was shambolic, whether it would have been against an arch rival or somebody else. I think.
Absolutely. It's obviously not all plain sailing at Spurs either, Mark. Lost on Sunday, no shots on target in the second half. I mean, are there question marks surrounding Nuno at this point?
I think there are. Yeah, I really do. I mean, on Wednesday night, the Tottenham fans were singing "Nuno, Nuno, make a sub" during the second half at Burnley. Just before he did, he made the subs a few minutes later.
Were you chanting that?
I was sort of watching it. I was sort of nodding my head along with it. If I would have been at Turf Moor, I probably would have been chanting it.
You're a ringleader.
No, I'm more of a follower in the singing situation. But up until about 2 minutes before they scored, they hadn't had a shot on target again. So that was, it was like about 64 minutes when Lo Celso had the first shot on target. You know, he's not doing a very good job of impressing the fans and sort of winning them over. And if you're getting mocked sort of 2-3 months into the job, it's a long way back from that, because even if they start winning a couple of games, it's only going to take one bad result, one bad performance, and you're back to the same bits of, I would say, 90% of the fan base, if not more.
And is it that Spurs fans aren't seeing a process necessarily either, because you can get on board with.
There's no process. If there is, it's not being shown out on the pitch. It's like watching Jose Mourinho's football without the dynamism of those counter attacks that he became quite famous for. Harry Kane, Nuno's not got him going now. Whether that's his job or not remains to be seen. But Mourinho certainly got a tune out of Harry Kane. They're defending okay. The last three games have all been 1-0. Either way, but I think they're defending okay because they're so risk averse. Like they're putting so few men into shooting positions, and that's just not, particularly after Mourinho, that's not what people want to see. And I would say that at least 90% of the Spurs fan base believe that Nuno is not the right person for the job. And so even if he does okay, people are just waiting for him to be sacked.
And with all of that being said, if there's a side here that come out on a losing scoreline at the weekend, then pressure really does mount.
Oh, without a doubt, because I think Nuno's under more pressure than what sort of being given in the sort of next manager to go market, because I think, it's about sort of 16 to 1.
Well, Simon, messaged in and said if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to stay for another few weeks, is there value in any other managers in the next to go market?
Yeah, I mean, Simon said maybe Dean Smith at sort of around about 14 to 1. I mean, you might mention your guy at Norwich with Farker, but again, they could have sacked him if they would have wanted to.
Yeah, I don't think, unless we're talking obviously before Sunday's game against Leeds in terms of a Norwich City perspective, but I think there's near enough 100% job security for Daniel Farke. So I'd be looking away from him. And he's relatively short now as well.
I mean, I thought that, Smith was my one for the start, just because I thought that it just never works out that easy. Oh, well, you sell your best player, you bring him free to replace him. Like, more often than not, I think that takes at least time and probably doesn't work anyway in the long run. I think Nuno's under pressure. He's on a pretty cheap contract. If he loses this game against United, the only reason I think that they wouldn't be sort of looking to sack him is that it reflects so badly on basically the owner, Daniel Levy now, and Parichichi, the sporting director who appointed Nuno, just looks really bad on them. But otherwise, I think he's under big, big pressure.
And in terms of this game, aside from managerial sackings, if they were to happen, What do you think the best bet is for this?
Yeah, I think the draw. United have only got 1 point from the last 12 available, and they're clearly vulnerable. But have Tottenham got the quality to beat them? Have Tottenham got that ability to do what Liverpool did to them? I'm not sure that they have. I looked at under 2.5 goals as well, because I'm presuming that United come out and actually like look to defend and be solid. And
well, they have to after
they
that,
have
don't
to.
They?
They surely have to. And I mean, that's how Nuno plays his football. Tottenham's last three games have all been 1-0. I was looking at some of the stats. I mean, only Norwich have had fewer shots this season than Tottenham, and only Watford and Norwich have had fewer touches in the box than Tottenham. So they're not a team that's creating much at all. So I think the draw could be the value, which maybe suits both managers, because if you look at it, are either of them going to get the sack after a draw in that game? I don't think they would.
It feels as if you're talking from almost a perspective of damage limitation, really.
But I think that is just a natural way to be, particularly for United after that they've had their big defeat. I don't think it does much, though, Jack, for either team's chances of, you know, ultimately what they need to do, which is finish in the top four. And our poll this week on Racing Post Sport was, it was around Manchester United. Do you like United 8-11 to finish in the Premier League's top four? 20% said yes, or 20.6% said yes. 37.2% said yes, but only if Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is sacked. And 42% of people said no. So quite a close vote if you put the yes and the only if Ole is replaced sort of aspect was. I voted for only if Ole is replaced because I think that they do need a change of manager.
There we go. Let's go through the rest of the Premier League fixtures for this weekend. It starts with Leicester Arsenal 12:30 on Saturday. Mark, how are we feeling ahead of this one?
I was looking at the prices, and I have to say, I thought that Leicester were a little bit big here. Certainly on the draw, no bet. They're barely favourites. I mean, I know Arsenal are 6 unbeaten in the Premier League, but I'm not overrating the form. 1-0 against Norwich and Burnley, 0-0 against Brighton, 2-2 against Palace. Could have lost both of those games. And then they beat Villa and Spurs. We've spoken really about how Tottenham aren't playing very well, and I don't think Villa are either. So not overrating what Arsenal are doing at the moment. I'll go for Leicester draw, no bet.
Burnley-Brentford.
I've got under 2.5 goals down for this one. I mean, in terms of attacking XG, Burnley at 9.2 this season, an obvious problem. Brentford have got the second best defence on expected goals in the Premier League. I'm just a little bit worried about Raya, the goalkeeper, sort of being injured for several months. The Alvaro Fernandez, the replacement, played for Spain under 21s. You assume because Brentford have bought him, he must be good. But I would like to see him play a couple of games. That's my biggest concern about the unders. But I'll take Brentford's sort of recruitment, sort of getting it right, because they normally do.
Liverpool Brighton up next.
Yeah, I mentioned that I don't like half-time, full-time bets on last week's show. But I think it's really difficult with a few of these games on Saturday. There's some real short ones. But all six of Liverpool's wins in the Premier League this season, they were ahead at the break. Brighton were blown away by Man City. I've mentioned a few times, I don't think they're quite playing with the same sort of the same way as last season, no. Even though results have been better. So, yeah, Liverpool half-time, full-time. But, this and Man City and Chelsea, they're going to be difficult ones to pick any value out.
Yeah, I mean, it's Manchester City, Palace up next, another short price.
Yeah, I mean, Palace are about 20-1. They've only had two defeats this season. So you look at that and think, well, maybe they are at least worth a bet on the handicap. But then I looked, I mean, the two defeats were both 3-0 at Chelsea and Liverpool, which is similar, if not slightly easier than what is a trip to Manchester City. So, I mean, I think it's a hard game to sort of really be advising a bet on, maybe sort of 2-0, 3-0, small stakes, correct score.
Now, I saw Bruce Millington in the kitchen of our office this morning. The first thing he mentioned was Newcastle going down. He's wrote a column about it. You were sitting opposite him in the office. Any mention from him about Newcastle going down? He seems fixated on it at the moment.
Yesterday, he was fixated on the tipster who tipped the draw, Joe Casey on the Racing Post, who tipped the draw in Palace v Newcastle, saying, you got it right, but you were so lucky to get it right. Yeah, I mean, like Newcastle are a really bad team, and then there's no getting away from that.
I should mention it's Chelsea this weekend for them.
Yeah, and I mean, Chelsea to nil was the way I was looking. If you look at Chelsea, they've only conceded 3 goals in the Premier League this season. 2 of those were against Man City and Liverpool. 2 of the 3 goals were also penalties. So, I mean, in terms of open play, they give away so little. The problem with betting a team to win to nil, your bet's never won until the final whistle. And, you know, that always leaves me a little bit uncomfortable. But I think with Chelsea, you're more confident than many other teams. They don't tend to switch off.
No. Watford, Southampton coming up. Now, let's have a brief word on Watford. That game against Everton. Now, I think you open the dictionary, head to sort of the word carnage, and that's what you're served up. Conceded the 5 the previous week to Liverpool, score 5 the next week against Everton. Where are we rating Watford at this point?
Yeah, probably just ignore both results, really. The Liverpool one is not... it's not going to define the season. It was a humiliating defeat because they barely had a kick. But, you know, ultimately, unless you go down on goal difference, it doesn't really matter if you lose 1-0 or 5-0. I think the 5-2 against Everton, and we'll get to Everton in a little while. Everton are missing quite important players. Yerry Mina, Decore, Calvert-Lewin. Like, that's the heart of the team, right down the spine of it. So maybe there's some vulnerability there. You're right, it is bonkers. And when you get bonkers results, I tend not to read too much into them. And like, you want to see like a body of work from Watford and sort of judge them on like a 6 or 8 game period. So a bit of a watching brief for me at the moment, which is why I've gone for the draw actually in their game against Southampton. I mean, Southampton impressed me, but they're a pretty short price given that they've only won once all season in the Premier League. And that was against the Leeds team that was completely ravaged by injuries. I do think they're better than the table suggests, but they just don't win often enough. And even on the podcast that we used to do, I mentioned Southampton all the time, and you say the same things. I'd take Ralph Hasenhüttl as the Tottenham manager, next Tottenham manager. I think he's really good, but they just lack that quality in the final third. That means I've struggled to sort of get on board with them winning matches at the moment.
I can't quite work out. Whenever you ask people in terms of who they think's going down from the Premier League, Norwich is obviously the first answer. Then it's Watford. And I think I must be watching different games. They've got 10 points on the board from their first 9 with a managerial change. And the games I've watched, I know there's been anomalies in this, but they've looked solid.
I thought they were okay at Tottenham when I saw that going. I don't watch Watford every week, but I saw the game at Spurs when they lost 1-0 to like a freak free kick from out wide, and even then they looked pretty well organised. And I think what happened against Liverpool, obviously it was a game that was on TV, so more people are watching it. They've sacked their manager, so that automatically gives like this kind of crisis vibe around it. But you know, we know that Watford don't hang around with managerial sort of situations, and they'll quite happily change it, and they may well do so again if Ranieri doesn't work out. I agree with you. I think obviously Norwich are one that you'd put down there. I mean, Newcastle would be another, unless they will improve the team, but they really need to. You know, Burnley are not winning enough games, but you're looking like Burnley, Watford could be one of them too. But you wouldn't. I don't think you'd want to go out on a limb at the moment and go, yeah, I fancy them.
I think you're
going to
have a fairly good team go down this season, aren't you? Super Sunday starts with a cracker, Norwich City against Leeds.
Well, the question I've got here, Jack, is do I want to back Leeds at 11 to 10?
Yes.
And I think, you think yes, do you? I'm thinking no.
Oh, well, that's good for me.
I'm not saying I want to back Norwich either. I was looking at under 2.5 goals because, there's no Bamford for Leeds, so he's, an important player for them. There's only been 4 goals in their last 3 matches in the Premier League overall. So I was like, well, what about no goal scorer? But of course, it only takes one moment for that bet to lose. Under 2.5 looks pretty solid. Norwich have only scored 2 goals. The one bit of hope I think that I could maybe give to you with Norwich is that they've played 7 of the top 10 in their opening 9 games. So, it's been a really rough start. Obviously, there was the humiliation of the 7-0 without Chelsea having to do that much to even win by that margin. So I'm just hoping that there's a reaction in this game. And Leeds are not playing with that much fluency. So, yeah, unders. And, Norwich, before the Chelsea game, had had the 0-0s against Burnley and Brighton. So I'm sort of looking at that Chelsea game as just being one of those days.
We're also now at a point in the season, what are we, 9 games in, where Daniel Farke's men have scored more own goals from open play than they have goals, which is a worry.
You know, if you back no goal scorer with most bookmakers, an own goal doesn't count. So, yeah, consider that for sure.
Villa, West Ham.
You said Super Sunday, didn't you, at the start of these games? I'm going for under 2.5 goals in this one as well. I just think at 21-20, it looks tempting. West Ham have got the third best defence on expected goals in the league. You know, they're keeping a lot of clean sheets, even kept out Man City. You know, you spoke earlier on about the fact Tottenham didn't get a shot in the second half of that game, even when they were chasing it. Defending really well. You know, the back four's organised. The two in front, Souček and Rice, don't go very far, you know, when the opposition have got the ball. So they've got that real sort of solid look to them. And Villa, I'm just not sure about them and sort of what they're trying to do. They brought in a lot of sort of wingers, and then he moved away from, a bit like what Norwich had done. So he then moved to a wing-back formation. You're going, well, where's everybody going to play? I still think he's trying to sort that out. They don't seem to be playing with much fluency to me, and they'll find it difficult. And if I can just make one last point, absolute disgrace that Declan Rice didn't get man of the match last week against Tottenham. I mentioned it that he was a big price. I mean, he was the best player on the pitch. I don't know. Cresswell won it for the corner that he put in. But yeah, I mean, Rice is really sort of turning it on there.
I forgot to mention, I don't know if you want me to raise this, but we had a lot of people in our work Fantasy Football League who were captaining Kai Havertz. And he was the only Chelsea player not to get bonus points. And you had... You thought a very shrewd bet on Kai Havertz, not only first, but any time goal scorer.
Yeah, I mean, they scored 7. He didn't get any. And to make things worse, in the League Cup, was it 3 days later, he scores first in that game. But this goes back to the point I was saying when I was getting congratulated for the Juventus winner the other week. Like, bad bets can win and good bets can lose. And that Havertz won, I mean, he went off like half the price that he was. Yeah, one of them things.
Absolutely. Monday Night Football is Wolves against Everton.
Yeah, I was going for Wolves. Decore, I think, is a massive loss for them in midfield. Everton, Calvert-Lewin as well. You know, that's a lot to take out of the Everton team. I think Wolves are just a good side that are playing well and a team I like.
Let's get on to James Milton's bets for the EFL. A real delight to have James Milton joining us this week for his best bets throughout the EFL. One from the Championship, one from League One, and one from League Two. James, great to have you on. Let's start with your Championship best bet.
Yeah, no prizes for originality here, but I just think leaders Bournemouth look really solid bet away to Reading. That's in the live game in Saturday evening. I mean, you just can't pick holes in what Bournemouth are doing at the moment. Unbeaten this season. Actually now Championship favourites ahead of Fulham and West Brom, who meet in the early kickoff. And Bournemouth really should be back for an 8th win in their last 9 matches this weekend. They conceded one goal in 7 away league games. And Reading are looking pretty leaky recently. They blew a 2-0 lead to lose 3-2 against Blackpool in their last home game. Then went up to Blackburn, who were in pretty horrible form themselves, and lost 2-0 there. And you just fear for the Royals. They could be outclassed by Bournemouth.
Yeah, Bournemouth looking very strong. Let's head to League One.
Yeah, League One. I mean, Rotherham to beat Sunderland. It's a really big fixture in, you know, the early days of the promotion race. Sunderland obviously made it through to the EFL Cup quarterfinals. They're going to be mixing it with the big boys there, but... You know, their serious objective is promotion. And I think this is a tough test for them. Sounds as though they picked up a few knocks in the cup win at QPR in midweek. And Rotherham have just been putting in some fantastic performances recently. They've won 5 of their last 7 in the league, all by at least a 2-goal margin. And warmed up for this game with a 5-0 win over Manchester City's youngsters in the EFL Trophy.
So Bournemouth, Rotherham, who's the third?
Yeah, the third one in the 2 o'clock kickoff in League Two is Northampton at home to Carlisle. And Northampton suddenly seem to have started moving through the gears. 3 straight victories to nil in their last 3 outings against Mansfield, Stevenage and Tranmere. And that game at Tranmere really caught the eye. They didn't have a single shot on target. Northampton came out 2-0 winners there. And I think the Cobblers' defence should be able to keep Carlisle quiet as well. Carlisle have lost four of their last five away from home. The only point they took during that run on the road was a two-all draw at Newport, who finished the game with nine men. And last weekend, Carlisle had 0-0 at home to Oldham, who are also struggling. I think this is a really tough fixture for them.
James, a solid debut on Mark Langdon's Bets Club. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Brilliant stuff to get James on the show. Is Dan Childs away? Has he gone for a sort of warm weather retreat?
Oh, Childs, he's married to a teacher. He's got, I don't know how many young kids. He's got at least a couple of young kids. So half to, he's one of them. He's first in on the holiday sort of leave tracker, mopping up as much school holiday time off as he can get.
Let's get your best bets for the week then, Mark. And let's start with the player prop shop.
Yeah, so Phil Foden was the... you know, he was the villain of the piece in midweek for Manchester City, missed the penalty. But his first goal scorer each way, 11-2, looked pretty big to me. If you look at, I don't know, talk about expected goals quite a lot on this show today, but in terms of sort of per 90 minutes in the Premier League, Foden's fifth at the moment behind Firmino, who had loads of tap-ins against Watford, if you remember, that really helped him. Ferran Torres, our mate Ferran Torres, who's now injured. Mane and Salah. So one of those players is injured. The other three play for Liverpool. Outside of that, you know, Foden is right up there on XG. And in terms of sort of most shots per 90 in the league, you know, because he doesn't play all the time. So, you know, adding it onto the 90-minute games, Foden on average is having the most shots in the league. So I think fair chance he plays up front against Palace.
What's your long shot this week?
Yeah, Real Betis.
You love
to
Betis, don't you?
I do, yeah. I mean, they landed the nap last week with the both teams to score. We're speaking before the game that they've got against Atletico Madrid on Thursday. So Atleti are playing on Thursday, so I don't know how they've got on, but I still think Betis at 6-1 are too big. Atleti, three times already in La Liga this season, they've had a game-changing result go in their favour in the last minute. So they're getting a bit lucky at times. They lost to Alaves. Could quite easily have lost to Villarreal and Sociedad as well. And Betis, you know, five wins in six. They're playing really fun football under Pellegrini, who had the nightmare at West Ham. Maybe there was just something about West Ham at that time that was just making things difficult. And unexpected goals, there's virtually sort of nothing between the teams. So obviously you've got to factor in home advantage for Atletico Madrid. But Betis are 6-1. I'll be getting involved in that. I'll probably be doing a lay of Atletico and probably also Betis on the handicaps as well.
If anyone at home wants to play a Mark Langdon's Betis Club drinking game, take a shot every time Real Betis is mentioned. The treble for this week, Mark.
Yeah, so Lille's failure to beat Brest last week was costly. All bets for this treble need to be on by midday Sunday. So it's a Sunday special. Two of them we've already spoken about, actually. It's the under 2.5 goals in both of those Premier League games. Norwich against Leeds and Villa against West Ham. That they were the two bets that stood out for me in the Premier League. I just think that in Norwich's case, not creating much. Leeds are missing Bamford. West Ham, a team that rely a lot on set pieces, quite well organised, so it'll be difficult for Villa, hopefully, to break them down. So them two, and then Nice, draw no bet, at draw specialist Angers. Angers have had a lot of draws in their games, so that's why I felt like I needed that insurance of the DMB. But I've got Nice down as, you know, one of the real top teams in France at the moment, so... sort of not to lose.
And we're coming off the back of a winning nap, so confidence is flowing this week.
Yeah, and I've just mentioned it, but I'll just go again for Nice, draw no better at Angers. So Angers are sixth in the table. Steve Palmer, when I listen to The Sweet Spot, the golf, he's pronunciations of the Spanish players, you often need sort of spelling out.
Because, yes.
But so if you're looking on the coupon, and it's Angers, but Angers, they're sixth in Ligue 1. But if you have a look at it, they're bottom three for shots on target. So they're not a team that create much. Defensively, they're among the sort of best in the league. But Nice have got a lot of quality about them this season. They've added a lot. They've got a billionaire owner that sort of pumped money in. They're on expected goals, crazily as this sounds, they're above Paris Saint-Germain this season. That has plenty to do with PSG not being very fluent in attack. But Even on Wednesday, they drew 1-1 with Marseille Nice, but they only allowed one shot on target. So they really are playing well. Gaultier, the coach, won the championship with Lille last season. He's had a big impact there. And they're a very difficult team to beat with a sprinkling of quality. So, like I say, I do want the draw on, at least not lose money. So draw, no bet, Nice, Sunday midday.
Let's get some Twitter questions. Let's start with an absolute cracker from James Pyman. He wants to know, Mark, whether any studies have been done in relation to results and goals and the size of a pitch.
Yeah, so James Pyman is somebody who used to work on Racing Post Sport and is still part of the Spotlight Sport Group. He was never going to ask a question of whether Ollie should be sacked. He's somebody that is always looking for an edge. His tennis stuff that he used to do in the Racing Post was fantastic. You know, you look at altitude and players that were, you know, could serve best in altitude and stuff like that. Yeah, he's a wizard on the old Excel spreadsheets. Always looking for an angle. What I always do in this situation is ring up Kevin Pelloon. So that's what I did. And Kevin has done it not at sort of, because James is an Ipswich fan, and this is because...
Poor guy.
Yeah, I think Paul Cook was saying, or certainly the fans were saying, that some of the tight pitches like Accrington and Cambridge, they felt like they were getting pressed quite a lot. But all the studies that Kevin's done into pitch size suggest that there is no direct correlation between the size of a pitch and the goals, and therefore the results. And it's normally about where your players are on the pitch rather than the size of the pitch, because he's even looked into like the Nou Camp, because there's this theory that the Nou Camp is this wide open. It does look massive, but I think that's mainly because when Barcelona were at their pomp, they would play with the fullbacks like wingers, and it just gave this optical illusion. But as far as Kevin's concerned, and you know, been some small teams come up in the Premier League, pitch size has had very little to do with it. I think this does come down, though, to what is home advantage and how much of it is psychological. And that sort of feeling of, oh, we're going to a tight ground, you know, like, I think that plays into the team's mind. So from all known evidence, maybe there's one team it could help, but on all known sort of general evidence, doesn't make a difference.
In regards to Ipswich, I've taken great pleasure from watching Paul Cook's post-match interviews. Have you seen them, Mark, where his voice just goes
four different people
within his voice box? It's incredible.
He's a strange old character.
But they're getting results at the moment. Jezar, sorry to bring this up once again, Mark. He says, last week you had a big bet on Havertz against Norwich by snapping up the early value. Do you have a lay-back part of the bet, or happy to have the perceived value?
Right. It wasn't a big bet. I don't really bet big on first goal scorers. You know, it would have been a nice big return because it was like, was it 13-2 or something? Do you have a laid-back part of the bet? No, I don't. Because I think you're giving away the value, aren't you? Or, you know, if you've got a bet there that's sort of 13-2 that's going off like 7-2. I know some people like to at least get their stake back, but it's not really the way I was sort of brought up with my betting, and no.
You're the Steve Palmer sort of train.
Yeah, I wouldn't be quite as aggressive as Steve, I think it's fair to say. But I just think, you know, it's such a hard battle to get the value. You then don't want to give that away when you get it.
Last week's episode, not only were you praising Havertz, but you were praising your love for otters.
He's come back and
otters are back, so they must have appreciated the love. Do you have any go-to bets that you check the odds without too much thought to it? E.g., otters is whoever's playing against Sarr for a yellow card is mine.
I know where otters is getting at there, and I know people do that with Adama Traore, don't they? It's just like, right, who's the left back or whatever in that game? No, I don't think I do. I feel like there was probably a time a couple of years ago I was sort of ahead of the curve with Atalanta when it wasn't quite as well known, just how good they were, and there was that sort of natural feeling of, oh, I'm just going to back Atalanta this week, because the market didn't really respect them. So that's maybe when that's happened, but no, it wouldn't be it wouldn't be something I'd do on a sort of every week basis. And I actually went to London Zoo on Monday.
Excellent.
No otters. The otters were like, I don't know what they were doing. We went to the otters enclosure, but...
So they've got an enclosure, but there were no otters?
There were no otters there. So I don't know if they were hiding or something.
They're on the computer sending in questions.
Well, they are. Well, that's it, yeah. So very disappointing to go all that way.
I'm so sorry to hear that. Let's get Andy's question next. Now, this really is a curveball. Andy wants some tips for the Melbourne Cup, Mark. is anything going to be incentivised?
Well, I just shouted that. I shouted out to the racing desk earlier on when this question came in. And they said, no, nothing's going to be. Oh. But that was the editorial rather than the tipping team. So
who do you trust more?
The tipping team. I would trust them. None of them are working in the office today. I mean, look, the racing postcast on Monday with Maddie will have a full Melbourne Cup. It would be irresponsible of me, given that I don't even know, like, what I don't even know incentivised was the favourite, you know, 2 hours ago, so I can't.
I thought you were going to say, I'm not sure what a horse is.
No, I don't mind horse racing, but Melbourne Cup would be out of my sort of comfort zone.
Sorry, Andy, we can't provide that, but yeah, Bruce will be back as well on Friday's show as well. I'm sure they'll be talking about it. Final question from Stefan. Do you take advice from any other racing post tipsters, or do you follow your own path? Are you a maverick in that sense?
I follow my own path. I mean, you know, I will certainly take advice. I mean, it'd be wrong, you know, it'd be wrong of sort of, and that's not just at Racing Post. Plenty of people that, you know, I admire at Racing Post, you know, Kevin Pelline and Dan Childs would probably be sort of the two that I think, you know, without sort of calling, you know, without wishing to sort of put them on a pedestal with the others. I mean, you know, Dan on the EFL is just outstanding, sort of his knowledge of the EFL.
Phenomenal.
And Kevin Pelline, it's just his experience of betting. I'll often just call up because he's such a myth buster. You know, like you get these theories in your head and you just run it past Kevin. More often than not, he will have investigated your theory and it will be rubbish. You know? And then
what's the strangest, you phone him up on a Wednesday evening. Has there ever been a phone call where you sort of look back at it and go, that was a strange one?
Do you know what? Not overly, I suppose. You know, he's always so open to sort of having this. I mean, like, I rang him up on Wednesday about the pitch size. I mean, that's a pretty bizarre. You can't just ring anyone up, can you?
Oh, no, Mark again. Yeah, exactly. Here we go.
No, but then, you know, there'll be people. I mean, we've had Nick Goff, you know, on various Racing Post sort of channels previously. Occasionally, we'll have a WhatsApp chat, or if we're out and, you know, he'll mention something, I'll take that on board. You know, there's plenty of people on Twitter that I don't let them influence my tipping, but I would just, if they note something, I think, you know, just gathering that information is a good thing. But ultimately, I prefer to take my own path, and, you know, I don't like this feeling. And you get it as a tipster, what people going, oh, I followed your tip, it was rubbish. I'm in control of my own money and my own sort of destiny and sort of my happiness with my bets. And sort of working it all out is half the fun, maybe even sort of three quarters of it, you know, like that. Just getting to it is what, you know, it's always what I've just liked doing from, you know, from really early on in my betting experiences, because, I'd struggle to just follow somebody blind,
and
personally.
Do you ever have a feeling, sort of a fear of missing out? If Charlie's put something up in the paper and you haven't backed it and it's won, you've never got an issue with that?
No, I never get the old FOMO. No, I think you've got to be really level-headed as a bettor, you know, because, you know, it's a bit like that Havertz thing last week. You know, some people, like, that would really affect their week. I mean, it's just, you know, if you're betting within your means, which is what you should be doing, if you're betting within your means, like, you've just got to just take the highs and the lows, because, you know, you don't want to be riding these, like, ridiculous waves of emotion. I don't think that's good for you. And, you know, if that is something that happens to you on a too regular basis, then, you know, maybe just think about sort of what you're betting and how much you're betting, because, you know, that doesn't, I don't really sort of think that's the right way to go. There is another question from Matt Sanders. How many current Premier League managers would be an upgrade on Ollie, or would any PL club appoint him?
19.
Yeah. How many others would appoint him?
Well, I saw a Cardiff fan tweeting last week that now Mick McCarthy's been sacked. Do you think Cardiff would take him back?
Look, I think he's done quite well to get United up to second in the Premier League. But, you know, even Steve Bruce was the one that everyone used to slaughter until he got the sack the other week. I'm not a Newcastle fan, and I'm sure they'd rather have just had Solskjaer. But I think that they were in safer hands with Steve Bruce in terms of not going down than what they would have been had sort of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer been in charge. And, you know, so I don't think any Premier League manager would swap. Sorry, I know we really have stuck the boot into into him. You know,
well, if he is listening, I don't think we've boosted his morale. One final one from me, Mark. Any selections for the Champions League coming up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really hard...
Last time I asked this question, it was Juventus, and it won. I know you didn't like the bet.
Well, I didn't like the bet because they drifted so much, you know, and you don't want to be backing too many that that drift and that they continue to drift. I mean, I don't think there's as much sort of value out there this week, that's for sure. What I would say is that... Maybe Sevilla to beat Lille, just because I think Lille have really struggled in the Champions League. Sevilla are, you know, they're about 4-6, 8-11. So I don't think it's an amazing price outcome, but they'd probably be the ones I'd be looking at for now.
Excellent. Well, there we go. Another brilliant week of Mark Langdon's Bets Club. Once again, thank you to everyone who joined in, whether that was on the Twitter poll or sent their questions in. As always, keep tweeting, Mark. I think we've got a backlog of questions, haven't we?
Yeah, I've already got some stashed up for next week. So, yeah, but please do get them in and we'll try and get for as many as we can.
Absolutely. As always, we've put up a lot of selections in this podcast. Please don't feel like you have to back them all. And if you do back them, only use money you can afford to lose. We'll be back next week for another episode. Until then, stay safe. Bye-bye.